It's Friday, March 13th, and welcome to Higher IQ. The last time you bought a coffee at a counter, an iPad probably swiveled toward you with three options: 18%, 20%, 25%. No human came to your table to take your order. You just wanted to walk in, get a $4 coffee, and leave. Now you're figuring out which tip option to press as the barista watches. 72% of Americans say tipping is expected in more places than it was 5 years ago. The standard percentage has crept from 15 to 20 to 25. And yet the federal minimum wage for tipped workers is still $2.13 an hour, a number that hasn't changed since 1991. Today, we're going to dive into how American tipping actually works, where it came from, why the U.S. is a global outlier, and why the system is designed the way it is. The answer involves the Civil War, the Pullman Railroad Company, and a business model that was built to avoid paying workers. Tipping didn't start in America. It began in the aristocratic homes of feudal Europe, where wealthy patrons would leave extra money for servants who provided good service. When rich Americans started traveling to Europe in the mid-1800s, they brought the custom home, eager to seem sophisticated. The American public hated it. Newspapers called it un-American, servile, a cancer in the breast of democracy. The argument was that tipping created a class system. By tipping someone, you declared yourself their superior. In a country that had just fought a revolution against aristocracy, that felt wrong. Six states actually banned tipping outright. None of the bans lasted. What killed the anti-tipping movement wasn't a change in attitude. It was the end of slavery. After the Civil War, millions of formerly enslaved Black Americans entered the workforce. The restaurant and hospitality industries hired them in large numbers, but many employers offered no wage at all, expecting customers' tips to serve as the entire payment. The Pullman Company, which ran luxury railroad cars, became one of the most prominent examples. George Pullman hired newly freed Black men as porters and servers, paid them between $12 and $27 a month, and expected tips to cover the rest. The system allowed employers to get labor without paying for it. As one historian put it, it's the legacy of slavery that turned the tip in the United States from a bonus on top of a wage to a wage itself. The racism was explicit. A journalist named John Speed wrote in 1902, "Negroes take tips. Of course, one expects that of them. It is a token of their inferiority. But to give money to a white man was embarrassing to me." Tipping was considered acceptable for Black workers precisely because it reinforced a hierarchy. For white workers, accepting a tip was seen as degrading. This is the foundation that American tipping culture was built on, and the economic structure it created has never been fully dismantled. In 1938, the Fair Labor Standards Act established the first federal minimum wage at 25 cents an hour, but restaurant workers were deliberately excluded. The industries that employed the most Black Americans, including restaurants, hotels, and agriculture, were carved out of the law's protections to secure the support of Southern Democrats in Congress. It took until 1966 for tipped workers to be covered at all, and even then, the amendment created a tip credit that allowed employers to pay a lower base wage as long as tips made up the difference. The federal tipped minimum wage is currently $2.13 an hour. It has been $2.13 since 1991, 34 years without a raise. The math of how this works is worth understanding. If you're a server at a restaurant and your employer pays you $2.13 an hour, the law says your tips have to bring your total earnings up to at least the regular federal minimum of $7.25. If they don't, the employer is supposed to make up the difference. In theory, no tipped worker earns less than minimum wage. In practice, the Department of Labor found that 84% of investigated restaurants violated wage and hour laws between 2010 and 2012. The enforcement is thin, the violations are widespread, and the system depends on customers to fund the gap that employers are legally allowed to create. This is why the U.S. is a global outlier on tipping. Most of Europe moved in the opposite direction decades ago. France legally includes a 15% service charge in every restaurant bill. In Germany, servers earn 13 to 20 euros an hour before any tips. Scandinavian countries have labor protections strong enough that tipping is sometimes refused as unnecessary. In Japan, tipping can be considered rude, an implication that the worker's employer doesn't pay them properly. Italy uses the word lamantia for a tip, which translates to from the sleeve, a small gift, not an obligation. A study in the Journal of Tourism, Culture and Communication found that even in countries where service is included, customers still tip for genuinely good service. The difference is that in Europe, the tip is optional and the wage is guaranteed. In the US, the wage is optional and the tip is the guarantee. You can see this structure playing out in real time. Digital payment systems from Toast, Square, and Clover have made it trivially easy for any business to add a tip prompt at checkout. Self-checkout kiosks, fast casual counters, takeout windows. As one consumer put it, they're cutting labor costs by doing self-checkout. Why am I tipping the machine? Most of the conversation around tipflation focuses on consumer annoyance, the guilt, the screen swivel, the creeping percentages. But that conversation misses the point. The interesting question isn't whether you should feel bad about hitting no tip at the coffee counter. It's what happens to the people who actually depend on tips for a living. The answer is not good. Tipped workers are more than twice as likely to live in poverty as non-tipped workers. In states that still use the federal tipped minimum of $2.13 an hour, the poverty rate for tipped workers is nearly 15%, compared to about 11% in the 7 states that have eliminated the tip credit entirely and require employers to pay the full minimum wage with tips on top. Those 7 states, including California, Washington, Oregon, Montana, Minnesota, Nevada, and Alaska, serve as a natural experiment. And the results are clear. Workers are better off, and the restaurant industry is not collapsing. Restaurants in those states have comparable or higher growth in tipped industries. The sky is falling argument that restaurants can't afford to pay a real wage doesn't hold up when you look at the states that already do it. But the poverty numbers only tell part of the story. When your income depends entirely on whether a customer likes you, it changes the power dynamic in ways that go beyond economics. The restaurant industry accounts for 7% of the U.S. workforce, but generates 14% of all sexual harassment claims filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. More than 70% of female restaurant workers report being sexually harassed at some point during their time in the industry. And the rate is higher among tipped workers than non-tipped workers. A study from the Restaurant Opportunities Center found that a majority of women who experienced harassment connected it directly to their dependence on tips. The logic is straightforward. When your rent depends on a customer's generosity, you learn to tolerate behavior you otherwise wouldn't. Waitresses in the states that still use the 2.13 minimum are twice as likely to experience sexual harassment as waitresses in states that eliminated the tip credit. They're 3 times more likely to be asked by management to sexualize their appearance for customers. During the pandemic, when tips dropped and harassment spiked, female servers reported being told to remove their masks so customers could evaluate their faces before deciding how much to tip. We should flag that much of this research comes from One Fair Wage and the Restaurant Opportunities Center, both advocacy organizations with a clear policy position, and the restaurant industry's trade group has pushed back on their methodology. But the EEOC data on harassment claims is independent, and the poverty rate comparisons across states come from the Center for American Progress and the Economic Policy Institute, which are more mainstream research institutions. Some restaurants have tried to fix this from the inside. Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group eliminated tipping and raised menu prices to pay staff a higher base wage. Most restaurants that tried this have gone back to tipping, partly because customers are so conditioned to the system that higher menu prices feel like a ripoff, even when the total cost is the same. The habit is that deeply embedded. The original design from the 1860s, where the customer subsidizes the worker's wage instead of the employer, has become so normal that even businesses trying to change it can't overcome the expectation. $2.13 an hour. That's the federal tipped minimum wage. It was set in 1991 and hasn't moved since. The system it supports was designed after the Civil War to avoid paying freed black workers a real wage, was excluded from the first minimum wage law, and is now expanding into every transaction with an iPad attached. The tip started as a European aristocratic custom that Americans considered un-American. It became the foundation of an entire labor system. And every time that screen swivels toward you, you're participating in a structure that was built not to reward good service, but to let employers off the hook. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.